old 80s favorite. What an album that was. Time After Time is one of my favorite songs
of all
time.
Yeah, me too.
Time.
Yeah.
Then it was like Shebop? Was that, or is that?
Shebop, Benino.
Yeah, Shauna looks black. She's way too young.
Changes.
That was my favorite.
Which was like Cyndi Lauper's answer to Madonna's Material Girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Money changes everything. I'm Patrick Martins.
I'm Katie Kiefer.
And I'm Shauna Pacifico.
And we are hosting the main course today.
This is Heritage Radio Network, and this show is sponsored today by the Hearst Ranch.
And we are playing Cyndi Lauper for good reason. She was actually one of the very important people behind this wrestling and rock music connection that existed. The WWF, Vince McMahon, and Cyndi Lauper, who kept combining, you know, these kind of faux pseudo battles with Captain Lou Albano. And Lou Albano was a great manager, actually passed away this week. So
what happened to him?
Well, it's amazing he lived as long as he did.
Oh.
He was a big guy.
Lifestyle.
Yeah, lifestyle. Actually, we are produced today by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. Guys, do we have any Captain Lou footage? We're going to do a whole section on him at the...
Natural causes, Patrick. Just look that up. So.
Oh, natural causes.
Totally natural.
He had famous for having rubber bands in his beard. That was his, like...
Oh, nice.
But do we have a little piece of him doing his wrestling promotion thing?
Yes. We do indeed.
Awesome. Do you want to play it?
Oh, I would love to.
The United States. The machines from Japan to meet Captain Lou Albano. None other than the giant John Studd and King Kong Bundy.
Well, let me tell you, killer, it's going to be a busy night. Number one, I got my Bulldogs for a title match. And then number two, I've got my giant machine and I've got my super machine. And I seem to be upsetting people out there. All the people in the world seem to enjoy this new combined effort of 816 pounds. But yet Bobby Heenan seems to come out here and he seems to get upset.
Intense.
And I saw him quivering. I saw him shaking. He said he knows who the giant machine is. Well, I said, Bobby Heenan, if you know who the giant machine is, then be man enough to get up there and take the mask off him. If you know who the super machine is, take the mask right off. Now, we know you have also a combined effort here, a combined weight of well over 800 pounds. With
oh,
Bundy,
my God. Yeah. It is a form
that
of rap.
Are you sure that guy is dead? Because he was on the subway with me today.
Very funny.
He's calling himself Mr. Cool now.
Well, anyway, throughout today's 2 hours of radio, you're going to hear a bunch of 80s 80s music and this and that. But on the main course, we're going to talk about...
Talk about different forms of agriculture, which is some exciting new developments in the agricultural world. And our first guest today is Jen Nelken from Gotham Greens. And Jen is going to tell us about, I think it's the largest hydroponic rooftop garden in...
It will be.
It will be. It's not finished yet.
It is about to begin construction.
You need to get a little closer to your mic.
Okay.
Well, that's crazy. And then we're going to have Mr. Despommier on.
We hope Professor Dixon Despommier is going to come in from the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. He's a little bit late.
And he wrote an article.
He wrote an op-ed. On,
well, he's a big believer in vertical farming,
yeah,
right?
And he has a company since 2001. He started a company of vertical farming, and they have gone through many phases of, you know, through the theoretical phases of this, which he's working with this concept in his classes at Columbia, and he has had architects design renderings that show what the vertical farms would look like. And we can, Jen, I'm sure, knows all about this too. So in the absence
cut,
of Dr. Despommier, we can pick her brains about it.
Exactly. It's definitely cut from the same stone. I mean, this idea to take advantage of existing space, and everyone is programmed almost, I think, throughout school and all that, protect farmland. You know, it's tragic that there's been this loss of, you know, exodus from the farms to the big cities. And in a way, what both Jen does and Mr. Despommier, you know, believes in is a way to turn that into an advantage and
absolutely
to grow food in new ways.
Well, there are many advantages to the vertical farming concept, not the least of which is that it reduces theoretically, they will be primarily hydroponic structures, which means that they won't be using dirt. And
which
they
is
will
crazy.
Also be,
I want to ask about that.
I know. And they will also be recycling black and gray water in order to provide the food for the plants growing in these towers. And so that would be a way of reclaiming water that is now just basically filtered out, turned into, you know, sludge, which is then carted off to a landfill. And the rest of the water goes off into our streams and oceans, not necessarily particularly well cleaned up.
Yeah, with all the pesticides. So, and then, you know, we should say that Roberta's, which is where we're broadcasting from on this rainy Sunday, is also really big into roof gardens, and they just completed an excellent fundraiser with the Liberty Science Center, which is this really cool museum that is doing an exhibition on food, and it helped raise money for this roof garden that they're planning on building. So I think we'll be successful. This is how I judge success. If when people from astronauts in the space shuttle are flying over Earth, if Brooklyn is green, if it's mostly
That's
green.
That's a beautiful idea.
I think it can be done.
I love that.
Through tactics, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's take a 1 minute break. And guys, could you maybe give us a drop of some nice transitional 80s stuff? And then we will come back with our first guest, Jen.
It is the main course on Sunday afternoon in Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm Katie Kiefer. My co-hosts today are Patrick Martins and Shauna Pacifica from Back 40.
Hi.
And
great restaurant.
We are really excited to have Jen Nelkin with us today. Jen is the... Jen, you just wear so many hats at your Gotham Greens project that I think you'd probably be better off describing to us what you do rather than me trying to... you know, figure out exactly all the many roles you fulfill.
Yeah, sure. Well, Gotham Greens is, just to back up, there's a lot of excitement now about local food, urban farming, and then a lot of different ways that this could be approached and how to do this in a city. So what Gotham Greens is doing is building a commercial scale greenhouse in the city. A lot of what you see right now related to urban farming is very small scale and more a lot of educational projects. And so this one is a 10,000 square foot rooftop greenhouse with hydroponic systems inside.
What's hydroponic mean exactly to our listeners who don't know?
Sure. Hydroponics means that you are growing food without the use of soil. So you are managing the plant nutrition. We have chosen this kind of production system because it's very lightweight. So we think it's a really appropriate way to grow on a roof.
Do the fruits or vegetables that are grown hydroponically taste different from those grown in the soil?
Because you are providing the nutrition for the plants, the nutrition is very high quality since you're giving the plant everything it needs to grow. And then the flavor compounds, you have a lot of influence on what the flavors are too. And so a lot of the hydroponic tomatoes that I grew on a project called the Science Barge here in New York City, the chefs would come in and say it's the best tomatoes that they had ever had.
Shauna, what's your experience as a chef in New York?
I don't use a lot of hydroponics.
Okay.
Mine is more field grown.
Okay. Is it an uphill battle to convince chefs that that kind of high-tech science can lend itself to gastronomy?
Yeah, well, I think some of it, some hydroponic tomatoes that you buy in the grocery store really don't have the flavor that they should.
I have noticed that.
Yeah, and so it really, the grower does have control over whether they're going to be flavorful or not flavorful. And a lot of it is because you're managing the water delivered to the plant. And so now if I'm growing a hydroponic tomato and I'm selling it per pound, mm-hmm. I could really just fill those fruits with water, sell more pounds at whatever right. price I'm given, and they're not going to be very flavorful.
Mm-hmm. Be careful before you give somebody an idea.
Right. Or you could then control the balance of the sugars and water so that you actually might have smaller fruits but much more concentrated flavors. And then so you'd really need to look to be able to market them at, say, more per pound because you're going to have less pounds if right. they're better flavor. And so I think it just depends on the grower. And so for us, I mean, we are going after quality more than anything.
Well, I'm sorry. Get back to what you were saying. So you're industrial, 10,000 square feet on a roof?
10,000 square feet on a roof in Queens. And so this project will use, we think that that's a good scale to start a commercial. Of course,
how big
what's
a roof
your product
is that?
Yield?
Give us, that's a high
that
rise
is,
roof.
An acre or? Is 40,000 square feet. So mm-hmm. we are starting at a quarter acre. Uh-huh. Okay. And we think
and
that's this.
What do you think your crop yield is going to be from that much space? Because hydroponically, you can grow more per square foot, right?
Right. Well, with a greenhouse and with the hydroponics, we're producing more per square foot, but then also year round. So the total volume over the years a lot higher than in a field mm-hmm. in this climate. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at anywhere between 30 and 50 tons per year.
Hey, Jack, that's an interesting, just in case you got it, that a quarter acre
can
being an
produce
ideal,
between 30 and 50 tons of food.
Yeah, and that's an ideal starting point. Yeah. I love that grammar stuff, you know, because it really gets yeah. people to, you want to really figure
it out. It
makes
it concrete.
Yeah. Do a quarter acre. You can
and
make
so
it work.
And so 30 to 50 tons of food, and that would be... What crops do best in the hydroponic growing style as opposed to, say, commodity crops mm-hmm. like wheat or, you know, the ones that require a lot of land
Can
mass?
You grow corn and wheat?
You can grow really anything in hydroponics. And okay. the groups that are doing that are, you know, NASA's looking into mm-hmm. doing that.
For the space stations.
Yeah. But the things that have so far done well commercially are... some of your vine crops like tomatoes, eggplants, bell peppers, hot peppers, melons, a lot of things in the category of vining crops. Mm-hmm. And like the tomatoes, they're not like your bush variety in the field. These plants will get 30 feet long, keep growing on a stem.
Well, vine crops, not grapes.
People are looking at grapes. Mm-hmm. I'm actually very interested in grapes. But yeah,
hydroponic
so these vining crops.
Wine.
There's a lot of interesting ideas about it, but some of the vining crops. Then you have a lot of the herbs and lettuces. These have been the most popular crops so far.
Yeah, everybody's bought ahead of that perfect green bib lettuce in the little plastic container mm-hmm. that says hydroponically grown. Yeah, and unfortunately, it doesn't have any flavor. I mean, those commercially grown hydroponic
and again, like
lettuces,
the tomatoes. Yeah, a lot of the really big growers just don't. You see a lot of small farmers starting in this, mm-hmm. and they will always have the better hydroponic produce.
Can we backtrack a second to when you were talking about how you can manage the water and the nutrients? Mm-hmm. What are you talking? Like you said something about sugars, and
sure.
I was sort of curious about that. What are you talking about?
An
when
easy
you say
way
nutrients?
To think about it is if you. Picture any plant, really. There's the vascular system of a plant. There's two main highways in a plant. One is filled with sugar, and one is filled with water. Hmm. The one with the water and the nutrients is coming from the roots mm-hmm. through the irrigation system. All the sugars are coming from photosynthesis, from the leaves. Now, both of those water and sugar lines are going into the fruit itself. So if I give the plant more and more water, it's going to fill that tomato with more water compared to sugar. Or what you can do is hold back a little bit of water through the way you manage your irrigation system, and then more of those sugars from photosynthesis are flowing into the fruit, and you would therefore have a smaller but more flavorful fruit.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, what is the source of the photosynthesis? Because if you're in a hydroponic setting, like if say you're in a vertical farm mm-hmm. and you're using hydroponics, you're not going to be using right. the sun to create photosynthesis. So you're using grow lights?
Well, that's what is, you know, some of the challenges that need to be overcome. Mm-hmm. A lot of the vertical farm is, you know, theoretical right now. It hasn't been built. And so, yeah, where is that going to come from? Because all what's making sugar through light energy, you're combining water and CO2 to form right. sugar. And then oxygen is a byproduct also. But this light, yeah, what the plants really want is PAR, photosynthetically active radiation. So it's very similar to the visible spectrum of light that these plants want. And so if it's not coming from the sun, it can be delivered through certain types of grow lights, not any light. Typically what you have people using are high pressure sodium or metal halide, although the LED technology is starting to get there. And it's because it delivers this certain part of the spectrum of light.
Mm-hmm.
And then those lights require a lot of power.
That's what the question is, if you're going to take
if you're going to build a whole skyscraper full of artificial lights.
That's a good thing. Maybe that's why he's not showing up, is because he's worried that we're going to ask him that question.
You just need to think of where that energy is coming from. And so while, you know, you could potentially fill 50 stores, it might then take covering the rest of the city in some sort of renewable energy source. Let's say you wanted to, you know, power these lights off of solar, and that you're not just pulling it all from the grid, then, I mean, that's quite a large area that you need to fill.
What are you guys using at Gotham Greens? Are you able to use the sun because
we
you're on the rooftop?
We are going to put in a few lights also to supplement in winter, but also use natural light, and we are also putting up 25 kilowatts of solar to meet our power demands.
So could other, theoretically, everybody could put up those solar cells and generate a lot of their own electricity.
Absolutely.
Even if they were using light bulbs.
Mm-hmm. Well, very interesting. I want to come back and talk, but just to break it up a little bit, I wanted to ask a couple questions. Well, first tell me quickly about Mayor Bloomberg endorsing you guys and you guys also winning a $400,000 grant from the city of New York.
Sure. And a lot of this is, you know, what I was saying in the beginning, that there's a lot of momentum in this area, a lot of excitement, but not really anyone who's doing it. And so the two people that you're talking about, NYSERDA and Bloomberg, Bloomberg's letter of support came because it is a commercial business. Because
it's a real effort to
and the
change.
Mayor's office was very interested in us and the fact that we are talking about this green project without looking towards necessarily grant money to do it. It's the green business can be economically viable is what they're really interested in.
And you can make your money back by selling the food.
Yeah, that it has its own business case without necessarily, so all we wanted was some political support, but not monetary support from their office.
Very interesting. I just came back from a dinner with the White House chef, and it was a real honor to meet him, the day-to-day chef. And one of the questions he asked me to think about before this kind of panel meeting was, what changes would you make into sustainable agriculture with zero budget? And I was like, impossible.
And then, there are no changes with
ironically, then Anne was like, how much money did Heritage have when it started? I was like, nothing. And just, I was like, how about yours? She's like, nothing. And it made perfect sense. Like, you know, great ideas can come with no money. And that's where you should start. Be viable. If not, it's not really sustainable. Right.
And this money that is from, we also won a pond from NYSERDA, which is the New York State Energy and Research Development Authority. And they really look at energy use in the city and renewable energy, but have become very interested in urban agriculture as well, specifically controlled environment agriculture, which is the type that we're talking about here.
That's right.
And so we won a difficult process to win some funding from them, which is I am definitely not the money person on our team. There's three partners, and we have one who is a more on top of that. And what the money is we won $400,000 from them, which if we are successful, we pay it back as a zero interest loan. And if we fail, we don't owe it back.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And then so the rest of the money.
Republicans would say encouraging you to fail.
So we have raised $1.4 million and the rest was through loans.
And so are you still looking to raise funds? Is there a website people can go to help support your project?
We are not. We have raised the money for the project.
So we're ready to rock and roll.
Yep,
so now all we need to do is buy your product.
That's what we need.
Ready.
Absolutely. When you see Gotham Greens.
Are you going to take us out to your van back outside Roberta's and sell us stuff?
not quite yet. I wish there was something for you to sample already.
Now, in San Francisco, Mayor Gavin Newsom has required all departments to audit their land, sinking places suitable for urban agriculture. I mean, if people were to do a self audit and look amongst their land, I mean, what are the steps towards starting what you've started, whether it be on a commercial scale or a small scale? Like, let's say there's a listener out there or someone who goes to our website afterwards. Where do you start and what are the headline steps to get to where you got?
Yeah, well, I guess there's a couple things. You know, what is your motivation for doing it? Are you a school? Is it your backyard? You want a kitchen garden, commercial scale? And then just a few basic things. Do you have light where you are. That's the most important thing, like we're mm-hmm. talking about. So we do a lot of site visits. A lot of people get interested in this and call us, you know, will you come and consult for us? And we come and look. And a lot of times, you know, it's just a shaded area. You're not going to really be able to get the production, because with plants, a 1% increase in light will be a 1% increase in yield. So this is a really important starting point. So do you have the light where you are? And then deciding on what sort of growing system are you going to use. Do you want to grow year-round? Do you want to just grow seasonally? There's a lot of great ways to grow food, and I don't think one of them is right. I wouldn't say a hydroponic greenhouse is always the best answer, but sometimes a good answer. And then you're choosing, did you have a vacant lot? Did you have a rooftop? If you have a vacant lot that's unshaded, great. You know, it only gets more complicated when you put it on a roof. But if you are then looking towards putting it on a roof, there's just some basic things that you need to start looking at with the Department of Buildings. One of the more difficult challenges is whether you decide to use a greenhouse or not. So if you just want to put a green roof, basically, with no greenhouse, but grow vegetables in it, then you don't really need to worry about the Department of Buildings. You just need to care about protecting your building on the structural loads that you don't have leaking.
How would people know whether or not their roof structure is capable of supporting, say, how many tons of dirt did you haul up to the top of your building?
Well, it's no dirt. So we have chosen hydroponics because it's a really lightweight method. But every building is different, you know, so you'll need to look at the way you want to grow and how many pounds per square foot your loads are, and then look at, you know, get the plans for your building.
That's right.
And a structural engineer will need to look at it.
Yeah.
But there's a couple things. So there's the loads, but if you are just doing it with soil on a greenhouse, that's fine. You just need to protect your building. But if you want to put a greenhouse, now you need to get permits from the city, because it's considered adding another story to your building.
Mm-hmm. And are they shepherding those permits in pretty easy, or
no? That's been the hardest part of this whole project, and it's just because it's really new what we're doing. And it's not that they're not supportive of the project, it's just that this does not exist in the building code.
So can't you just do it and then make the argument for getting grandfathered in, or because of the amount that you're investing of time and money and energy, it's not worth it in case you can't?
Well, I think it's become sort of a high profile project too, so I don't think we could fly under the radar and build
like
this
Roberta's
thing, right?
I love it.
So we're really going for, and that's what part of, you know, getting some of the political support has been about, you know, just to see that people really think this is a good idea. And it's just like green roofs. When green roofs first started, this didn't exist in the building code. It was really, you know, difficult to figure out what that would fall under. And I think, you know, after we get through this project, because everyone is excited about it, they're going to figure out how to get, you know, line items in the building code for this.
Right. And I think that it's going to go back to architectural school, and we should get Curtis to do a show just about this. But we have a show on Heritage Radio Network that addresses design and architectural.
Burning down the house.
It's called Burning Down the House. But anyway, I think that in the end, what's going to happen is that architectural schools are going to have to start embracing this technology and then start, you know, creating buildings that are specifically geared towards this. In fact, my house guest this weekend was telling me that the bank she works for, PNC, Pittsburgh National Bank, they installed an entire green wall on an existing structure just because Pittsburgh is such a concrete jungle. But I mean, it's going to, you know, like, it's all sort of moving in that direction. And I think that people will start building buildings. New buildings will come with that infrastructure already built in, and the building code will already be saying, this is what we're going to do, and this is how you're going to do it.
There's a lot of architectural companies now that focus on green building already, just without building green walls, but just green by being sustainable.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of controversy about that, actually, even. And a lot of the buildings have to be retrofitted because nobody's tearing down blocks and blocks of buildings because they're not green. So that whole subject is really, I think, quite a fascinating one, because there's so many people in New York, and especially in Brooklyn, who are really interested in that. Getting the rest of the country to come on board, I think, is more of a challenge.
Our needs are
Chicago,
so different. Yeah, Chicago's
Chicago
like
is very much into the green thing. They have a lot of green building program going on. They have a lot of high rises. They have a lot of green gardens, green rooftops.
Are high rises to convert them necessary? I mean, I've always just imagined, like, before even really knowing much about this topic, my instincts were always empty lots or suburban gardening?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we're starting at. I mean, the vertical farm is a really interesting concept, you know.
Is it real?
You know, I talk to Dixon all the time. You know, I'm really excited about it. You know, we've sort of pulled together a lot of people to really look at this, and the biggest thing is where the energy is going to come from. But there's a lot of steps in between. And so I think that's why he's also interested in Gotham Greens. And so I think the first step is to look at the available space. Because as you move towards some of the kinds of ways of growing we're talking about, the capital expense is huge. Mm-hmm. So first we need to sort of see if this whole idea has legs. Can we sell the produce? Does the business case work out in the city? And if it does, then we can look towards developing more lots or more roofs.
And getting venture capitalists involved.
Yeah, but I mean starting with the space that's available and finding the right and then maybe moving towards something larger.
In fact, one of the things that scared me was venture capitalists, like being the ones to be able to have the money to invest in a high-rise or something. I mean, think about it, like some venture hedge fund, weird Wall Street dude, like deciding how many ounces of lettuce you get.
Yeah. You know? You could find developers, I suspect, who would be willing to buy into this idea in terms of making that part of their business plan in creating a new development.
Well, some of it's interesting because we think you can get the lead points for this kind, which is what a lot of developers care about.
Absolutely. That's Curtis keeps coming back to that.
Yeah.
Lead. Did you guys see the beginning of 30 Rock?
No,
this was the premiere.
Don't watch TV too much.
You don't have a TV? Oh, because
of course
of
I do, but the only thing I'm allowed to watch is SpongeBob. Oh, come
How
on.
Old is your daughter?
13. She can recite every single.
She's still like watching SpongeBob?
I got news for you. I love it too.
Really?
Totally.
What is it? Brilliant. Is it played like adult humor?
Yes.
Yes.
It totally does.
All right, Shauna.
It's got something for everybody.
Yeah, I don't watch it a lot, but
Shauna, yeah. Just for people who can't hilarious. See, she's rifling in for her SpongeBob membership pin ear.
She's wearing her SpongeBob socks.
Actually.
Well, we should take a break, and we are going to come back. I mean, I have a million questions. So we have another 20 minutes on the main course, and then we're going to come back to main course part Q.
That's what I heard. Patrick, but I... We're back.
Are we
We're
back?
Okay. Yes.
So
I'm not going to censor you, Patrick.
We are disappointed...
that we don't have our second guest, Dr. Dixon Depomier from Columbia University.
Easy, Patrick.
You know,
well, he has
happen.
A great face for radio. It's
he
too
does.
Bad.
He's a beauty guy. Yeah, I would have loved to have had him on. Well,
I
maybe
was really
another
about
time.
To invest.
Blame it on the L train.
I'm going to blame it on the L train.
I was really about to invest $20 million into
in
an
vertical
electricity
farming.
Stock.
You have $20 million?
I wish I did. But
you're going to, though.
Do you think I will?
Yes, I do. You should get a copy of your Chinese horoscope. Mine came true every single month this year.
Do you know I read a book?
Every single month. I'm not kidding you.
I read a book
Lillian
that
Dow.
Does day-by-day predictions.
Oh.
I mean, it's just day-by-day people and like what... So I'm February 10th, so there's a whole like page and a half on February 10th. Unbelievably on. I mean,
really?
It's a famous book that does this.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
Oh, my God. They were like, you know, sometimes you get mad at people, you know, and put the word in front.
That's not vague
for.
At all.
He puts the hate on.
No, but anyway, yeah, no, I find that, I
yeah,
believe
amazing.
In that stuff.
Well, the Chinese, you know, they've been predicting people's futures for many thousands of years. They definitely have a little science thing happening there.
So, is it true that Whole Foods buys your food?
Let's go back. Let's
oh,
go back.
Sorry.
We need to reintroduce.
Okay.
Our lovely guest today is Jen Nelkin from Gotham Greens, for those of you who are just tuning in.
Nelkin.
N.
Oh, Nelkin?
In,
where is
in,
that from?
As in nasal.
I don't know.
It sounds English to me, actually. Anyway, so Jen Nelkin is, you are sort of the chief gardener.
Yes.
But you have built, this is not your only groovy project.
Yeah, because you have dirt under your fingernails.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any dirt.
No dirt.
That's because it's hydroponic.
There's no dirt.
Yeah. Right.
I've gotten to work in a lot of exciting
She is kind of
facilities.
Shriveled, though.
Yeah, everything from... running greenhouses in the South Pole in Antarctica to
okay, what's your degree
barge.
In Smarty Pants?
I did a master's degree in controlled environment agriculture, studying greenhouse computer control systems and
Poindexter.
Hydroponic systems.
She is smart, huh? You can tell. She's
yeah.
very fluent.
But,
so you and where did you get that degree from?
At the University of Arizona.
Uh-huh. So you did good place to do a water
hydroponics
where there's no
well,
freaking
I know,
water.
Which is
Each
actually amazing because if you think about it, these technologies are really great. In the desert, it's also a great, like the yeah. city, because it's good for non-arable land. And
That's
actually
right.
hydroponics.
And tons of sun.
Yeah, and tons of sun. So hydroponics actually uses about 20 times less water than any other form of agriculture. So
right.
it's the right way to grow food. If you're using recirculating hydroponics, you actually need to qualify some of these statements. But
yeah, in other words, you can't just like siphon off the drinking supply to fund your Gotham Green rooftop garden.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys using gray or reclaimed
we
water?
We are,
I should
yes,
say,
collecting.
Remediated
uh-huh.
water.
Absolutely. We are collecting the rainwater off the roof mm-hmm. for our irrigation system.
What about the technology that, for instance, when I was reading Dr. Depomier's essays about the vertical farming projects, and they were talking about reclaiming black and dirty and gray water. These are euphemisms. Gray water would imply like things that have, you know, washing machines, dishwashers,
that's gray.
Kitchen waste. That's gray water.
Hasn't
and then black water
be
would
black.
Be your, you know, real solid wastes. In other words, what you flush. So that's the black water. So there's a lot of technology around reclaiming water out from those two sources. And we have that, those of you who live in Manhattan know that we have the big riverfront project on the west side where they have the sewage treatment plant. And they basically filter out the water and they take the sludge to some sort of facility which sort of cleans it up, sort of, kind of. And then I guess it goes to a landfill. I don't think they're really using it. And then the water itself, I guess, is repurposed into some other place where it's needed. I don't think it's turned into drinking water.
Well, what's interesting
again.
About the water in New York City and why green roofs and rainwater collection are so important in the first place is New York City, as with many old cities, has something called combined sewer systems mm-hmm. here. And so what happens is the water that goes into the regular drains on the street and all the water that goes through your house, it combines into a pipe before it goes to the water treatment plant. Mm. So typically what we do is we treat all that water and then discharge the clean water back into the watershed. And then we take more from, you know, our watersheds upstate. So when there is a large rain event and the system is flooded, that water actually will discharge before being treated out mm-hmm. into the river. And so that's why there is a major effort. It's actually cheaper to provide incentives for green roofing or permeable pavement or ways to minimize the amount added to the system during a large rain event than to dig up the pipes and undo the whole plumbing system of the city.
Wow.
Very interesting. Well, I have a question. Michael Pollan's op-ed said that eventually the insurance companies were going to start to sit on agricultural committees because they would have a vested interest in keeping healthcare costs down. So if the urban gardening movement grows, do you think you will gain enemies in farming groups that are basically, you know, would look at you with more success as making them obsolete or unnecessary and taking attention away from their plight?
No, I mean, again, I think there are, you know, so many ways to grow food, and different ways of growing are appropriate for different crops or different areas. And then again, if you think about it, I'm not actually taking, you know, money that was going to another farmer because the demand is growing so much that there is room in this market for there to be more and more people involved.
Excuse me for 1 second, but if you recall, I sent you that article that I had picked up, and I think I sent it to you, mm-hmm. and also it's addressed in some other places. By 2050... our food demands will have grown by 70%. That's 70%. So we're actually behind the curve in mm-hmm. terms of solving some of these agricultural problems. So, I mean, just I didn't mean to interrupt you, but just
no,
so people realize
there's just room in this.
What an incredible exponential rise in need we are going to have in the coming years. We're going to add 2 or 3 billion people to our population.
Are we growing
in the next
as fast as
40
we
years.
Have been in the past 30, 40? Are we
slowing
in
developing countries? We are, yes. For instance, in Islamic countries, the natural family size is anywhere from 7 to 12.
And then the Pope, meanwhile, refuses to come out against condoms. I mean, that is egregious. No, serious. That is egregious. They have to embrace it. Get with the friggin' times. There are millions of mouths that there's not enough food for
but
because
not
they
gonna...
have some 2,000-year-old moral issue. Move on.
But a family of 12, the parent's not going to use a condom. They're not going to, I mean...
Or some type of contraception. You don't need 12 kids. Same with whoever the Muslim leader is. I don't know, but it has to be a grassroots effort to, you know, if you don't want a baby, you don't need 6, you know, or if you want 1 baby, you shouldn't have to have 5 or 7. I mean, I think it's an issue that at some point they're going to have to reckon with. There are too many mouths.
Well, this
you don't need a family with 12 kids.
Into women's, into a women's rights issue, because what happens is that in developing countries where the women do not have rights, they turn into just baby-making machines, essentially. And once you educate women about birth control, then they are much better able to take control of their economic situation.
Yes.
They reduce the number of births, and they
Absolutely.
Begin creating viable businesses. And that's what many of these small companies that
totally.
Invest in women's groups in Africa and so forth for beadwork or whatever it is, ice cream. Remember we had those ice cream girls on? I mean... That's all a happening thing, and it's really
Absolutely.
About educating women. If you
and
educate women,
them.
And no woman in her right mind wants to have 12 kids.
No. It's too much. You can't even probably give the appropriate need that they need. So I'm sure the Pope is listening. This is it's Sunday.
And if he's not, we're going to make sure he gets an email to that effect.
Because
he can download this on his MP3.
And we'll take letters.
The Pope can download, but he can't support condoms.
Pope, get with it.
He has to support condoms.
You're on the wrong side of history.
Well, I don't even worry about the Pope. It's really, if you guys read, you should read that book, The Clash of Civilizations and the Remaking of the World Order by Samuel Huntington. Mm. You know that professor from Harvard who died maybe a year or two ago? But he wrote this book like 15 or 18 years ago, and he predicted the whole rise of Islam and Islamofascism and, you know, the fact that any culture in which women are not valued is a culture that is going to create problems, essentially, I mean, in a nutshell, for the rest of us. Because they have no resources. They don't have enough food. Mm-hmm. They're going to run out of water. Let's talk a little bit about water issues, because I think in the coming decades, not only are we going to be having trouble feeding our population, but we're going to have a big problem with water. So, Jen, I know you must have thought a lot about how to work with water.
I mean, everything that we're looking at is thinking about food, water, and power.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do we take care of all these things?
Power being energies.
At the same time. Yeah. Yep. So that's, you know, why we are putting up the amount of solar we are, 25 kilowatts of solar, which New York State also is very progressive in. We have a really intense rebate program right now, which people should really take advantage of, funding where you get about up to 60% of the installed cost back of solar panels right now if you grid tie it and feed it back to the grid when you're not using it. Uh-huh. And so we have really looked at the power for our facility and the water, collecting the rainwater off the roof and then using, again, recirculating system. So we are getting that water ourselves and then using it over and over again. It only leaves the facility through the produce.
Right. In other words, it just goes, it's not, because one of the problems with conventional farming, as we know it now, is that when you have what you called a rain event, and you know, there's a lot of rainfall and you might wash some topsoil away, but you're also washing an enormous number of chemicals into mm-hmm. the water table. Mm-hmm. And I think there was, I'm sorry, I can't be more specific, but I know there's a lot of controversy about the Ogallala Aquifer out in the Midwest, which is being increasingly polluted by agricultural runoff, and that's going to create huge problems in drinking water supply over the next 15 to 20 years. So this is, I mean, to me, this is like the next world war is going to be over water.
Over water, yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And we're heading down that path faster than
water,
I think anybody wants
water
to
and food.
Why can't anyone do the sea salt? Take salt out of
desalinization
ocean water. There is so much. We are an Earth planet, and we're complaining about water. That's like as ridiculous to me as the people of Roanoke, you know, that lost colony. They starved to death.
Yes.
They were at the Atlantic Ocean. Why
they,
didn't
they
wouldn't
fish?
What is going on? Why can't anyone with all the technology help that? It's amazing that we can't
I'm
use
not sure,
ocean
Jen,
water.
Why don't you use,
I mean, there are a lot of large
water.
Reverse osmosis plants, and I'm not sure if it is a capital cost or if it's an energy demand. I really couldn't answer that. I worked in a greenhouse in the Caribbean, and the whole island, you know, was run off of RO water. So that was, you know, their main source there.
It just seems weird. People are dying of thirst.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, it just seems like there's a disconnect between the highest science minds and that, because
I would imagine it can be done.
Yeah,
I think it's the money.
It costs a lot to take the salt out.
I mean, I don't know personally, but it's
plant.
You have to build a facility. You have to educate people. You have to train people. I mean,
if I was Oprah, I'd build a couple of those.
Well, if you had your $20 million.
Yeah, there we go. I'm taking it from Despommier and I'm moving it to the water in Africa.
Your psychic here says you're going to have $20 million.
That's
your
right.
Your friend here is going to be your friend forever.
Awesome. So, Jen, let's go back a little bit and talk about the, because you've mentioned the science barge a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really neat program. I'm not sure everybody knows about that. I know my daughter has been to the science barge.
Really?
Because she's in the public school system.
What is the science barge?
The science
barge.
When
she's not watching SpongeBob.
Exactly. Well, you notice a watery theme here,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the science barge is an awesome project. So before Gotham Greens, I worked for a nonprofit company called New York Sunworks. And so we took a 5,000 square foot barge and we built a hydroponic greenhouse on it. We powered it with solar, wind, and biofuels. It was irrigated with rainwater collected off the roof and an RO unit on board as backup water.
Reverse osmosis.
And it toured Manhattan for 2 years, doing all public education, workshops, teaching school kids. And that project we operated it for 2 years and then donated it to Groundwork Yonkers. So it's permanently docked now in Yonkers and still open for education programs.
I thought I'd just seen it like last fall. A year ago, this fall.
It was just this summer for the first time that it went to Yonkers.
Yeah, because I took a lovely walk down the Hudson River, you know, that beautiful, it's not just a bike path, but it's the mm-hmm. walk.
Yeah, all
it's like
Hudson
a
River
seven
Park.
Or 8 mile yeah. walk down the island, and it was anchored there, right near the, not far from the frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
Who sails it?
Excellent watering
hole.
It
is actually a Spudwell barge, so it has no motor or anything. It has two, you know, 60-foot steel columns that go through the hull of the barge, and that's what anchors it into the ground. And so a tug has to move it.
Oh, I see. So, okay, so you didn't need to partner with this seaman or anything.
No.
I wanted
she didn't lapse into pirate speech.
You are so green and organic. Like, I feel, for the first time ever, I feel toxic. Like, I am not doing enough just in your presence.
And she's not drinking either, so.
Yeah, you're very toxic.
I mean, I was thinking, this is way, way off. Like, 700 years from now, people are going to look back and be like, this was the first record where we talked about it. But, I mean, by concentrating our food supply in the city, I mean, that's also has security issues related to it as well.
That's a very interesting point.
Well, there's a couple interesting things. I heard someone at a conference I was at, and I, you know, haven't looked this fact up myself to make sure that it's accurate. I'm going to say it anyway, though, that Manhattan, if we lost access, you know, if we couldn't get food in, we only have a 36-hour supply of food on the island. And it'd be interesting to figure out where that number came from.
I'm
going
to go to the supermarket. I'll be right back.
Yeah. And so...
Wait a second. 36 hours. 36 hours. Jack, we are produced by Jack Inslee. Jack, that is amazing. 36 hours to survive if we were cut off from our food supply. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bridges and tunnels get bombed. Mm-hmm. We survive for 36 hours. I mean, who would die, though, of starvation after 36 hours?
Nobody, but we would start...
That's when the food would supply would run out.
That's when the shortages would become...
Die. You're just going to have to start
first
swimming.
You need all the...
Wait a second, 36 hours.
Right. And I mean, that's why I haven't looked it up,
words,
but I had heard...
supermarkets would be empty in 36 hours.
Right.
There's canned food. There's beans.
Josh Ozersky would get 10% of the total New York side through his connections.
I mean, so it's, I mean,
I would
a lot
run
of,
to back 40.
Well, Shauna would run. Yeah, Shauna would take care of us.
I'd go to back 40.
I'm going
to
start...
once every 2 weeks. I mean, it is that good.
I
would literally
fly yet. I got to make the trip.
But is it zombie proof?
Yeah, right.
That's actually an interesting test.
It is.
Is it protected?
Sure.
We you do, have low walls, some... that playground outside. Yeah. I don't buy it.
Yeah, those kids are zombies, man.
they affect your business.
They actually stand at the gate or at the fence and scream into the kitchen in the middle of the day when we're not open. Give me a burger, asshole!
Oh my god. You should give them like E. coli filled burgers.
Like, I come running out with a knife. I'm like, where's your parents?
You're running at them with a knife?
Well,
nice.
Just kind of like, well, you start
Katie,
calling
I say the E. coli thing. She's running after them with a sharp object.
I'm not sure which one is more effective.
I just show it at the door. I'm like, what do you want?
Depends on whether you want a long and slow or a short and quick.
I once asked that. I was with Michael Pollan once, and I was just like talking with one of my stupid friends about whether it'd be better to freeze or burn to death. And Michael Pollan was like, just to end this. Freezing, you just fall asleep. Fire is very painful. All right, now never talk to me again.
Freezing would be painful.
No. That's, no? I've read the same thing Michael Pollan has.
Freezing is painful, but you don't really...
Well, you don't really feel...
You're never
Well, you feel it when you feel it when you thaw out. If you've ever been ice skating, for instance, remember that? When you go ice skating and your toes start... your toes start freezing.
Oh.
And when you go home and you take off your ice skate, or when you take off your ice skates and you trudge home through the snow and you get to your house and your feet are freezing cold in their little crummy boots, and you take off your boots and by golly, your toes hurt more than you ever dreamed was possible because
holy
they're
cow.
Thawing out. Well, it wasn't the freezing that hurt.
I'm booking my ticket home now.
Yeah.
We should. I'm going to take a little station break. This is a station drop. Are you guys sitting down in the back? I'm going to drop a station drop.
Go ahead.
Yeah?
Jack is
this is Joe
Bastianich,
and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Well, we're going to take... We are sponsored by Hearst Ranch. We're going to take a one-minute break and
listen. Patrick, here's a question. Tears for Fears or Human League?
God. Tears for Fears.
Tears for Fears.
Really?
I like Human League, but okay.
He's like, I'll let democracy rule. We're going to take a 1 minute, 2 minute break, and then we will come back for our conclusion. This has been a great, great
fantastic
show.
Thank you,
Jack.
yet another 80s song in honor of Captain Lou Albano, who is
I thought it was in my honor.
No, it's not 1860s. This isn't Pa Engels in the with the fiddle. God. This is actual acoustic.
How do you take that?
Oh, you know, because Patrick has a peculiar phobia.
Back in the day, you know, when Katie was born, you know, the seismic shifts between the plates had not yet taken place. So she could get all from Africa all right away.
That's right. That's how I could just walk across river from Paris.
You looked really good.
All her knowledge of freezing to death comes from actually being alive during the Ice Age. Just kidding.
I thought you were going to say it was because I spent some time as a cryogenically frozen human.
Katie is beautiful and sexy. No one should listen to what I'm saying. I mean, I'm making you sound like you're 2,000 years old.
And that's fine, because that's why radio is great. Because I will still be doing radio when I'm an old, old lady.
Good. Anyway, hopefully on Heritage Radio Network.
I'm planning on it.
Really?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Let us just wrap up here with our wonderful guest, Jen Nelken.
Thanks for having me. You've just been fabulous.
Yeah, fabulous,
Jen, you're
fabulous.
Amazing. You are real,
very smart girl.
No nonsense.
Yeah, we really enjoyed having you. I do hope you'll come back.
Jen has distilled these things enough. And as we all know, being able to distill an idea is a sign that you really understand it.
I think we can safely say that Jen knows her business.
It's a commercial venture.
It's a commercial venture, which
is
really
important. Too
much
talk out there.
I know.
Heritage Foods, by the way, we sell 150 pigs a week, 40,000 pounds of meat every week. We have no choice but to sell it, you know? And I like that. Even though we are not even a blip on the radar, at least I know I'm doing that. And it sounds like you're doing the same thing. I mean, of course, running a business is already doing it, because that's in the...
It's all interconnected.
Yeah, and you are the ones that allows us to...
Yeah.
What percentage of your business is going to be to wholesale, and what percentage to retail?
The majority of it will be to grocers. Large places that can take, because we're looking to, as a small starting, less deliveries. So probably just some large volumes to some grocers like Whole Foods.
What's your prices? Competitive?
Yeah, absolutely. What the thing about us is that, you know, it costs us more to grow the food in the city, but we can keep the same price as the next guy by recouping that on the distribution.
I was just going to say, you just need to find distributors.
We don't use one. We have our own trucks. Our own truck.
Your own truck.
That's awesome.
Electric. And you're going to move 40 electric. Or 50 tons of processed food?
It actually runs on celery.
Yeah. Biofuels.
It's also the nitrate celery that cures their hams from their pig supply. Any livestock ever? Chickens? Is that part of it?
No, I would just like some chickens in my apartment for myself, but not at
chickens
Gotham
are gross.
Grand.
I want
Isn't
goats.
It still illegal to have chickens?
No,
it's in your
and a rooster is illegal.
A rooster is
Why?
Illegal.
Why?
Yeah,
cockfighting.
Oh, why? Just because they might cockfight? They eliminate them? Just on the off chance?
Maybe because they're noisy. I don't know.
Yeah, the noise.
Chickens are kind of gross, but...
They are dirty.
But I will tell you one thing. If you live in the country and you can have chickens, it's the end of... Patrick, what are you doing, man? Chickens are the end of ticks. No more ticks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you come from New England, then you know that Lyme disease is... that New England is the epicenter of the Lyme epidemic.
We need a sound effect
Southern
for
New
Lyme
England
disease.
Especially. We really do. It is just the most devastating disease. If you do not connect with that way early on in its roosting in your body, you are doomed to many years of heartache and illness. But in any case, if you have chickens, bye-bye to the ticks.
I just spent some time up in New England area.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time Lyme up disease. There. Yeah, make sure you
look green.
Look for your ticks, baby.
I was making cheese.
But Jen, we are we're going to bring you back when the Gotham Greens farm is officially open, which will be, we hope, sometime in March.
We will be selling produce early spring.
So you'll be telling us, you'll be back to tell us all about the construction.
What a blast that was.
And,
no, it'll be very interesting. I mean, I think,
and
you
what
know,
crops you're growing and where people can access
absolutely.
Them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to.
Well, if you run on the restaurant opening schedule, you'll be open in a year. They're like, oh, we'll open in 5 months. And then a year later, they...
Yeah, but that's because they're not depending on the Department of, buildings or whatever it is. The gas and Con Ed. Yeah.
Jen held it up. I mean, I like this three co-host thing because, I mean, we had a great show. The fact that we are disappointed in...
Dr. Depomier was unable to join us today.
It's just this or call the weird. This is radio. We're serious, you know. But at the same time, I think we would have never been able to get Jen's.
Yeah,
true...
we wouldn't have gotten right down to the depths.
Absolutely fascinating. Malkin. And I think it would be fun for you even maybe to consider, just consider, you know, a kind of show, you know, a how-to for our listeners, and that be up on the archive so that people could copy your model, because it is unbelievable, and the world needs more people like you for sure.
Well, thanks.
Doing it and doing it serious.
Well, thanks to our guest, Jen Nelkin. Thank you to our engineer, Nat Wiener, and our producer, Jack Inslee. Thanks, Shauna, for joining us.
Anytime.
Please stay with us.
We're all coming back.
Please stay with us for
the main course, part
two,
where we are going to talk about Regina Schrambling with Regina Schrambling, and Mike Edison's coming back to talk about Captain Lou Albano, who sadly passed away of natural causes at 76. So the difference you made.